All right, Siobhan, you want to turn on your recording? All right, Chuck, Mr. Chairman, it's ready to go.
Great. Good evening. I'd like to call the January 26, 2021. I need to correct the agenda, Mark. Lower Frederick Township Board of Supervisors workshop meeting to order. The time is 7:08 p.m. First item up is our Pledge of Allegiance. If you can cue that up. I pledge allegiance
to the flag
of the United States of America. And to the Republic, for which it stands,
one nation,
under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Let the record reflect that the full Board of Supervisors is present at tonight's meeting, as indicated in the agenda, as well as all staff are present at tonight's meeting. Our announcements for tonight are our standard announcements, which I'll read now. Township meetings are recorded for the purpose of preparing the minutes, and the recording is destroyed 6 months after the minutes are approved. This meeting will also be recorded by the teleconference provider, which in our case is Zoom. It's requested that all persons wishing to speak before the board shall state their name, address, and the subject matter upon which they wish to speak for the record. In the interest of facilitating the business of the board, all persons addressing the board shall be limited to 2 minutes, unless such time is extended by the chair for good cause. The Board of Supervisors will provide a reasonable opportunity for citizens to comment on any non-agenda items after all agenda items have been addressed, but prior to the adjournment of the public meeting. Meeting attendees will be able to ask questions at specific times during the meeting through chat, audio, or by sending an email to our manager, Mark Hudson, at manager@lowerfrederick.org. You can also call the township office number, and that number is forwarded to our to Mark's cell phone, so he can pick up there as well. The last announcement, Mark, you want to do the executive session?
The board held an executive session on January 13th to discuss property.
Great. So that brings us to our first agenda item for this evening, which is the update on the Ziegleville home heating oil release.
Okay, thank you. We got a update actually from Senator Mensch's office. DEP legal counsel has been in touch with the local district magistrate about obtaining permission to enter the property. Per the court's request, an inspector from DEP's Bureau of Investigation will go to the court on Friday, January 29th, to seek access. If granted that day, DEP contractors could be on site and working as early as Monday, February 1st, pending clearance from a PA1 call. Once on site, the contractor should expect the project to take about 2 days to finish the investigation at the Hockle property.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Are there any questions for Mark regarding the home heating oil release update? I assume the neighbors have been notified as to what's going on.
I was contacted by DEP today. They're having trouble getting a hold of them, so they asked if I had any additional information. So I provided that to them, and they're going to reach out to them today or tomorrow.
Okay. Hearing no further questions, I guess that brings us to public comment on agenda items. Do we have any feedback from the public?
I do not see anything at this time.
Okay. Moving on, we have four resolutions that we're going to be discussing tonight. And I guess, Mark, I'll leave it to you to walk us through them.
Okay, the first resolution that we were looking to speak about is the tax collector compensation for the years 2022 through 2025. This year, the tax collector position in Lower Frederick is up for vote. So the option to change the compensation for the tax collector needs to be done by February 15th so that everyone knows who would be running, what the compensation will be beginning in 2022. Currently, the tax collector is paid 4% of the township taxes collected. And asked to look at different ways to do it. So the ways townships pay tax collectors are the percentage method, the salary method, or the per bill method. The school district and the county both pay the per bill method. So I gave the board different options for salaries and per bill. Over the last 7 years, the average salary for the tax collector is $26,804.04 from the township. When the board, the 2019, the board raised the taxes for 2020. The taxes went up approximately $100,000, and the tax collector's wages went up approximately $4,000. So to do to change the tax collector compensation, the board would have to do a resolution that would let the tax collector or any tax collectors that are running know what their compensation will be beginning in 2022. So that's why we're looking at it now.
One thing, unless somebody on the board or our solicitor or somebody else has a problem, I think for the residents, I think they should know what the current compensation all up is for the tax collector position. If we were to do nothing, what our projection is for this year, which includes the county and the school district. I can tell you I'm looking at it, but I...
Okay. Well, that was for last year. I guess it is for this year. The total projection for the school district, county, and the township is $45,797.
Thank you.
Yep.
I know we're not going to make a decision today, but I think it makes sense to pay by the bill. That way, if we have more homes, there's more work and there's more pay. By tying it to our taxes, you're getting an automatic pay rise when we raise our taxes for no additional amount of work. So that just seems to me, I think a lot of townships do that. Seems like the fairest thing to do. So that's kind of where I'm leaning.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Marla. And then also that the school district and the county also do it per bill based off of, you know, increments. So I think just to keep it consistent for easier math, I think per bill makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I would agree with both Marla and Terry about the per bill, and it's just a matter of how much per bill.
Yeah, I'm not adverse to that. I think it should either be a salary, which we could adjust if we saw the workload going up over the years, or per bill. I do want to point out, though, when Mark gave us some comparables, and I looked at Limerick, which has about 7,161 properties. And based on their rate, their compensation, if I use their per bill rates, is $30,000, roughly, mm-hmm. for Limerick Township. And it, last year, we paid our person $29,000, roughly. So to me, there's a discontinuity there in compensation, unless I'm really missing something, which I don't think I am. I think there are technologies now which make depositing of checks and, you know, remittance much easier than it was years ago.
I mean, that's Limerick. I mean, what about other townships like Schwenksville or Perkiomen or Upper Fred or Lower Salford? I mean, what about our other neighbors? That, I mean, that's one example. Do you have some others?
Upper Frederick's still doing the percentage. They're at 3%.
Right.
Douglas is a $26,000 per year salary. Schwanksville pays $27.25 per bill.
$27?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
I would need to know the number, number of bills to know what that is, Marla. Upper Salford is 4.5% of tax.
Yes.
And yep, Marlborough's 5.
Correct.
Yeah, Marla, the smaller municipalities, because there's a much fewer, lower taxes and much lower number of bills, end up paying a lot more per bill.
Yeah.
So that's why you see Schwanksville being so high. Because otherwise, you get to the point where you can't find anyone. I live in a very small borough, and no one ran for tax collector 4 years ago. And so we ended up having to use the tax collector from the neighboring township. So that's the problem you run into. If you make it too low, especially for the smaller boroughs, people just aren't willing to do the work.
So Mark, you indicated, or maybe it was Chuck, last year, the tax collector just for our township brought in, what was it?
28,954.48.
Okay.
What happened was our taxes went up.
Yeah.
So there were a few more houses, I think, because of some of Arcadia was on. But I think a lot of that was because our taxes went up. So that's why when you do it per bill, you only get more money if there's more tax documents.
Currently, our township, the tax collector sends out 2,068 bills in the town. So the other thing I did want to mention is if we do the bill method, the per bill method, what the county and the school district do is they take the per bill amount, so whatever the salary would be, and they divide that out by 12, and then they pay once a month 12 even payments. And then at the end of the year, there's one additional bill for any interims that come in. So that's if a new house gets built and the tax collector has to do an interim bill for a portion of the year. And then you get one. So the tax collector would get paid 13 times.
I mean, if we want to tie it to the bills, then we're looking at either compensating at $12 a bill for $25,000 or $12.50 a bill for $26,000, if those are the numbers we're thinking about in terms of compensation.
Yeah, I mean, I have to echo what Peter is saying. If you make it too low, you're not going to get, I mean, it is work and it is a lot of responsibility. We don't want to make it too low, but we also have to be reasonable about what makes sense for us.
Well, in 2019, it paid $24,600 roughly. So the numbers that I read off is if we decide that we want it to be $25,000 or $26,000, that equates to $12 a bill or $12.50 a bill.
And Marla, that's my.
Yeah, you're good.
Cause, yeah. I had for another municipality, I had a quick survey done. These are mostly all Bucks County municipalities. But the municipality is about the same size as Lower Frederick in Bucks County. They're paying, I want to say, between $19,000 to $24,000. To their tax collectors. So I think what you guys are paying right now is not artificially low in any sense. it sounds maybe even a little high, but right in tune.
Yeah, I mean, some of those bills are multiple. It has school district and other things on it, right? It's not just Lower Frederick.
No, yeah, you have to calculating your salary. The Lower Frederick Township is only 1/3 or one, you know, of the salary the tax collector get. They also get paid by the county and by the school district.
Right.
So our portion currently is about 2/3 of that, but it's one of the three components that make that up.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, just looking at the averages of the, or not the averages, but the previous years and take out tax increases, right around that $12 a bill gets close to where it generally is.
Noelle, what's your feeling?
I'm comfortable with the $12, the per billing. $12, with it being a portion of what the tax collector makes. I think that's in line. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dave.
I'm just going to say, it's not like we're going to, we have a certain number of housing. You said
68.
So that number is more than likely going to go up, not down. So if we go with that, gives a built-in salary increase as housing stock increases in the township.
Agreed.
At a reasonable rate, I would imagine. So I'm okay with the fixed bill, or I could go either way, either a fixed $12 bill or we do a salary of $25,000 and keep it flat for the next 3 years. I'm fine with either of those
solutions. Yeah.
4 years. And again, to play devil's advocate, I mean, I think if the tax collector has more work, if we build 100 more houses in the next 4 years, the tax collector is not getting, I like the idea of being paid for the work. He does more work or she does more work and you get more pay. But I just feel in the sense of fairness, I think it's better to do it by the bill.
So I have a question. How divided up is the work between what they need to do between township, county, and school?
The school district's all its own. The county portion of the tax bill goes out on the same bill as the township bill.
So I was saying.
So yeah. It's all pretty much rolled in together. There's no extra work with the other income that they're making with the school and the county.
No, the school is extra work, but the county isn't. Is that right, Mark?
I guess. Yeah, the school's its own. It's its own animal. I don't know what the difference in work for the township and the county is. It's on the same bill. You know, he has to divide it up and send distributions out to the county. And I really can't talk to how he does that. It seems like everybody's really.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, have they employed any automation at this point? I mean, most of these things, most of the bills one gets are automatically kicked out by some computer somewhere at the end when it's needed to be done. There's not a lot of human intervention, but sounds like there still might be with this process.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that still come to the building to pay both their school district and their township county bills.
Okay.
So if it's all right, I'll prepare a resolution that for next Tuesdays, that's a per bill. And then if over the next week, if you want to look at the dollar amount, and then you can vote on that at the Tuesday meeting.
That's fine.
Hey, Mark, if I can throw a couple of extra monkey wrenches in here, please.
Go for it. Thank you.
Yay.
Yeah. Other things, just to let you know what other places also consider and include in their bills we did talk about interim bills. So we probably want to set a fee for that. But another area you probably want to look at is also dealing with duplicates and certifications, which are issued when someone is like refinancing and they need a certification that all the taxes are paid up to date. And some places also control the fee for a bounce check or return check. Lastly, you know, I don't know if the township has done this in the past, but other places also provide reimbursement for office expenses, administrative expenses, printing, postage, that sort of thing. I don't know if you guys have done that in the past or not.
Yeah, we pay for the postage and the printing of the bills.
Okay.
We do that. And we provide the office.
Okay. And you might want to put that all in the resolution then, Mark.
Okay.
But, you know, like I said, a lot of places do set fees for the tax certification, fees for duplicate bills, and fees for bounce checks, along with what we've discussed today.
So I assume since we haven't done that, that those things are all covered based on whatever the current compensation is, or we've been paying extra for that, Mark. Do you know?
No, we do not pay anything extra.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like the tax certification, Chuck, mm-hmm. I think that's a fee that is charged to the taxpayer or whoever is seeking that certification.
Okay.
So that's, you know, someone, you know, normally like a title agent will call up the tax collector and saying, hey, we have a closing on this house next mm-hmm. week. I need a certification that all the taxes are paid up to date. And the tax collector says, okay, yeah, that's going to cost you $35 and I'll get it to you. So if we haven't said it, I don't know what the tax collector is doing it, if they're doing it for free or they're setting their own prices. But that's certainly something the township can set.
Okay. So just for completeness, if the board does decide on a number like $12 per bill, you know, if we were to add 200 homes in the 4 years, so that 25,000 increases to like 27,200, just, you know, obviously if we only add 100 homes, it's going to be less than that. You know, it's going to be roughly $1,000 increase.
I just think that the issue that occurred in the past with the reduction was that the tax collector was making more money for not doing any extra work. And that's just kind of what I feel strongly about. So if they're doing extra work, you know, make more money. I think that we do pay for duplicate bills and certification fees. So we probably should include those on the resolution. Maybe, Mark, you can find out what we're doing now.
Yep.
And what? Yeah, your point, you know, well taken. In 2015, the compensation was $23,600. And in 2016, the compensation went up to $30,700.
And that's and that's why they reduced it, because our taxes went up.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So one other question, just is it typical for townships to provide an office for the tax collector?
I know several townships that do, Dan. It's not always the case, but it's not unusual.
Okay. Yeah, I just didn't know if we were an outlier or if it's common practice. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's pretty common.
Okay. And since we have citizens that come to the office to pay the taxes that way, it's probably good to keep that ongoing.
Yep. I think like a tax collector can do it at their home. I mean, they have that option once they get elected.
Okay. Thanks.
Is there any further discussion on this resolution, or has everybody said their piece?
Is it standard for us to pay for the printing and the stamps?
As far as I can tell, yes, Marla.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. That's very, every place I've seen does that.
Yep.
And I think there's actually in the tax collector law, there's a description of what we can reimburse them, what's appropriate for the township to reimburse them for it and what is not. So usually you see the resolution saying the township or whatever municipality will reimburse the tax collector for these expenses as allowed under the tax collector law.
My only last question is for Mark or Peter. We have to pass this resolution at our next general meeting. Is that right? To stay on track? We can't.
It has to be done by the 15th. If you don't do it by February 15th, then we're locked in for the current resolution for the next four years.
So whatever paperwork is in front of us next week, we got to be able to just fill in the blank in terms of a rate.
Yep. We'll have that ready.
Okay. Are we ready to move on? Okay. The next resolution we're discussing, which Mark will lead us in, is the resolution for an open space committee.
Okay. So as we all know, the township voted to put a tax on the an additional tax on the earned income for open space. So with that, then the township will need to appoint an open space committee. The board in the past has talked about utilizing members of the other boards to be on the board, to make up the people, to make up the board. So we have that to discuss. I guess the first, I'll just the establishment and general duties. The Board of Supervisors hereby establishes a committee which will serve as an advisory capacity and as a resource to the Board of Supervisors on matters pertaining to the evaluation of parcels of land and property interest for purchase by the township for open space, conservation, recreation, and or historic purposes, subject to the approval of the Board of Supervisors and as more particularly set forth below. The committee shall be known as the Lower Frederick Township Open Space Committee. So the next conversation would be the membership and the composition of that membership. So currently the resolution that I put before you has seven members. That can change to five. It just has to be an odd number. I did send this to Peter and he did change some wording. So we have where possible, the Board of Supervisors shall appoint one current member of the Board of Supervisors, the Planning Commission, the Park and Recs Creation Board, and the Environmental Advisory Committee to fill four of the seven seats on the committee. The remaining three seats shall be at large and shall be filled by appointment of township residents. The committee members shall serve for terms of 4 years or until their successor is appointed. That until their successor is appointed would help us with the issue that we have with the EAC at the current moment and the PC. So that'll clean that up. The one question that Peter and I did have is what happens if a member is no longer a member. So if we have a member on the open space board and they term out of the EAC, what will we do with that member? That's one question that we do have to answer if we're going to utilize this method. But we do have at the beginning of that sentence, where possible. So that could help clean that up.
Well, I'm guessing that if somebody left one of the boards, that board would have to appoint a new person in their place.
Yeah, no, Zach. Well, what Mark and I need to know from you five supervisors is, yeah, how do we handle that? Because however you want that procedure to take place, it needs to be put into this particular resolution. I added the where possible, just to give the board a little flexibility in case you run into a situation where, let's say, you know, there's no one on the planning commission who wants to be appointed to open space. So instead of being stuck, okay, we got this vacancy, you know, you can say, we'll appoint someone else. But likewise, as Mark said, you know, a question we had was, if you have one of these four representatives, you know, for example, the board of supervisor representative gets voted out of office, are they still on? You know, they're going to be still on this board until their term runs out, or unless we kind of change up this language to say, you know, if you are appointed to this open space board as a representative of another township committee board, when you come off that other committee board, you're automatically off of this one. It just depends on how the board of supervisor wants to deal with that procedure. So we can put that language in this resolution.
Well, I guess the first question is, do we see that as problematic, right? Or is it something we don't worry about?
Well, here's
I actually don't see that being problematic. If you're appointed to the open space board, you fall out your term. If your term is up on another board, you still fulfill that term.
Yeah.
I mean, another way around it, we could make the terms 3 years instead of four. I mean, I it's not going to be an issue until it's an issue. That's how life works.
Yeah, we're just trying to anticipate some of these problems. And if you if it's not a problem for the board of supervisors, then great. You know, but we just wanted to raise that issue. I know some townships where their open space land preservation committees are year-long terms, so they just reappoint them every year.
Well, is 4 years too long? Should we shorten it?
I actually think that's a little too long.
Yeah.
Everything changes. Maybe 2 years? One seems short.
Yeah, one.
Two?
Four is too long. I'm good for two or three.
I like three better myself.
Yeah, three feels good. Yeah.
Is that going to drive you crazy, Mark? Is that an odd number?
That's easy.
Okay. I know when we started our comp plan meetings at 6:30, that created a lot of problems.
that's creature of habit problems.
Yeah, okay. I'm fine with that as well.
And then what Nicole Noel was saying, then if they terminate their participation in the EAC or one of the other boards, they can continue for, you know, worst case scenario, they'd be on there for two more years or whatever. But I'm just thinking, that's 2 years, yeah. I'm trying to figure out the circumstances under which it's going to occur. And that's...
Yeah. I think it's probably more likely that someone will just not want to do it anymore than.
Yeah.
I guess what would happen, Dan, is let's say a supervisor has 2 years left in their term and it's a three year on open space. Do we let that person stay for that extra year and then replace them? Or do we say,
just let them finish. I mean, that's what I think is the nice thing about 3 years versus four. In all likely, doing mathematical averages, they're going to be at least a year in to it. So the worst case scenario is they're hanging in there for two more years. And they could always resign if they didn't want to stay, I would imagine.
The other thing is you'll have either two or three change every year. So they could move into the open seat. They could fill the open seat and then you could replace them with a member of a board.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Going with the 3 years, that opens that up quite a bit.
Yeah. I'd recommend if you're going to do 3 years and seven members, have one of the open seats up every year.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to lie and say that I think that seven seems kind of excessive, that maybe we should abbreviate the number of members.
That's fine. You have to go with five or seven. I guess you could go with three.
The advantage of the seven is you have the three open seats, and that kind of helps balance out the other folks on the other boards. It gives them more of a voice.
No, okay. I just because we have such a hard time trying to fill seats most of the time, there's will always be an open seat. It kind of I understand the balancing out. Okay.
Well, I'd rather have six rather than four if there's going to be an open seat.
Well, I think we only have the option of five or seven.
No, what I'm saying is if you have an open seat, yeah.
I mean, I'd like to discuss the composition of this board as well. My thought is that the board of supervisor would not be a position I'd like to see on this board. Just again, this board being an advisory to the board of supervisors, I just feel like that's redundant and leave opportunity, either whether seven or five, leave opportunity for more of the general public to participate in this. Again, it's an advisory board to us.
So you're suggesting having four from the public and three from the boards?
If it stays at seven, sure. And again, not if we can't fill the positions, I don't see why multiple members from any of the named commissions are on here. But we don't have any other boards that I'm aware of or commissions that is township-driven guidelines, you know, roles that we kind of force a board member to be part of, because again, they're all advisory.
Well, except for the ASA, Terry.
No, that's state mandated. That's the state rules we have to follow.
So your suggestion is to not have somebody from the Board of Supervisors on this committee.
Yeah.
And to possibly consider having a composition of five.
Right. Unless we can't fill any of the 2 to 4, in that case, open seats, then I could see allowing a board member to be part of that. But not to make it part of the resolution that we have to fill it with a board member.
But it could be filled with a board member.
Correct. If there are no other members or the public that want to participate.
I could get behind that flexibility.
I could get behind the flexibility. I'm not sure, due to the nature of this board, due to the fact that we're talking about this open space committee and the types of people that might have interest in that, I don't think it's... I don't think it's appropriate to put a roadblock up against any of the board members if they wanted to be a member of that committee, because what they're doing is something that's advisory to the Board of Supervisors. I mean, it's like it's taking away, it's making an assumption that everything this board would do couldn't be influenced. Not influenced, but could the individual from the Board of Supervisors might not have their own opinions and stuff that would impact the direction of the board or of the committee and what that committee might do. That's taking, just because somebody's on the Board of Supervisors shouldn't take away certain aspects of their citizenship.
I think maybe a good compromise would be, and I think Terry suggested this, is keep it at seven, not mandate a member of the board on it, but not prohibit it. So if a board member wants to be on the open space board, they can apply like everybody else. I think the thing is not mandate it.
So
the wording that I'm good with your wording, Marla. I was a little concerned with the wording Terry used, because Terry said if they couldn't get anybody else and a supervisor wanted to do it, I think it just should be whoever would fit the bill best. If you, I could go along with not mandating a supervisor onto the board, onto the committee. But I really think it would be, if one of the supervisors wanted to be on the open space committee and they submitted their interest in why they're a good choice for that, they should not have a demerit in front of their names because they're on the they're a supervisor.
Well, I mean, the way it's written now, we're not mandating that anybody. It says where possible. Maybe one compromise is that we just eliminate Board of Supervisors from the list. That doesn't preclude them. It just doesn't say that. To me, when you say where possible, then you name the four different groups, you're kind of stating a preference that, you know, every all things equal, then you're going to take the one who's from one of those four groups over somebody who's just not in any of those.
Right. Yeah. I could coalesce around the idea of not mandating, like sort of like quasi mandating, like you do there with where possible, somebody from the Board of Supervisors, but I don't want any perception that they are have to jump through any additional hurdles to be part of that committee.
Well, I think, Dan, it would work the same as any of the other committees. I mean, any of us by law can be a member of the other. Well, right. I mean, not all of, I think not zoning hearing board, but we can be a member of the other committees, right. But we have to go through the same things as anybody else. So if you remove, I think if you just remove a supervisor from that list, so it's a list of three instead of four, would that,
yeah, that, like I said, I'm fine with that as long as there's...
That would be my recommendation on what to do based on this conversation.
Yeah.
So let me just read what I think I hear everybody saying. We're going to revise the text to read, where possible, the Board of Supervisors shall appoint one current member of the Planning Commission, Parks and Recreation Board, and Environmental Advisory Council to fill four of the seven seats on the committee.
Well, it has to be three.
Four's got to change to three.
Yeah, it has to be three.
Right.
Yeah.
That acceptable?
I think that's I think it's a good fix.
Yes.
Again, yeah. It doesn't preclude a supervisor being on it. It just doesn't mandate it. And I think that was Terry's concern. Yeah. I think that makes sense.
Okay.
So Mark, in the text here, you refer to the Environmental Advisory Committee needs to be changed to council.
Got that.
And when you read membership, compensation, and vacancies, it is compensation, not composition, because we do mention compensation.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to go to the composition of the board.
And the only other recommendation I would make is we use the word chairman. I think it should either say chair or chairperson.
Yeah, that actually, I was going to leave that for the code of conduct discussion is.
Yeah. Well, across the board.
Let me finish what I was going to say is we should be gender neutral. And in the code of conduct, there's a lot of he. We can make it everything gender neutral. That would be better.
I'm good with that.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be better. That would be appropriate.
Yeah, that's fine. That's
neutral.
So, for those of you who are familiar with New England politics, it's no longer Board of Selectmen. It's called a select board in many places.
And I don't know whether the typo is still in there, Mark, but it had super spaced visors at the end. So I they're really good glasses. I don't know, but it should be one word.
Okay.
The very bottom of it. Got it.
Yep.
Mark, the only other thing that caught my eye was on page 3, item E. And we're talking about doing periodic inspections and reviews of properties. I mean, the Park Board does some of that now. And I'm guessing the EAC is going to be doing some of that too. I guess it doesn't hurt to throw this group in there as well. And they can figure out how to coordinate, if at all, with the other two groups.
But... Chuck, what this group would be doing is when you if you purchase easements on properties, conservation easements, ag easements, they're usually written in such a way that someone needs to be checking the property on an annual basis to make sure the easement's being complied with. It should actually be a person that has received appropriate training. A lot of places actually hire outside people to do this, but I do have some smaller clients who have taken it upon themselves, have volunteers do it. But the volunteers need to be trained specifically on how to appropriately do that. So it might be a little different than what the other township committees are doing. And it's aimed specifically at looking at preserved properties and making sure they're being compliant to the easement.
Yeah, I guess my question is it can we allow the group to employ the assistance of the EAC and the others to help them with this task? And suppose somebody's on this committee who's not able to get around that well, and they're walking through, you know, heavy terrain and stuff. And that was my only thought. It's not a, you know, a stop showstopper.
Mm-hmm. We can Peter and I'll figure something out to get that in.
Okay. In that same area of the document, maybe it's implied here, but I know of in a couple of townships, or at least one I'm aware of, where the open space committee, if there's, let's say, a property that's owned by a resident that is highly desirable to the township, and let's make it even, and there's no known heirs for that person, they would enter into a discussion with them about the term I heard used, and this may or may not be the right term, Peter, is they discuss getting a potential, like, first chance for the township to provide them an offer on the property before it would be provided to the general public. So right of first refusal kind of thing. And I just wondered, is that contained within these powers and responsibilities? And if it is, I do think it's something that other townships have used, especially where there are, you know, landholders with no heirs, or the landholder is very interested in the township preserving the property or whatever, and this would facilitate that process. So I just don't know whether I can read that in what letters A through G here.
Well, I guess, that would be subsumed in issue whether or not we want members of this committee to go out and beat the bushes and talk to property owners about preservation or sale of land to the township, just in general, not in this very unique and specific instance that you raised, Dan, but yeah. I do know of open space committees where, that is part of their jobs, is that they go out and they're the first people to go out and talk to landowners to see whether or not they're interested. This is usually dealing with conservation easements,
right?
But it could be for anything. Yeah. If the board of supervisors wants this committee to do that, we certainly can add that. I wouldn't limit it to that specific instance that you raise, but I would make it general that we would like them to go out and basically kind of market this opportunity and try to find people that are interested in preserving their property or selling their property to the township, just in general. And then you're saying would fall, be a subset of that task.
So,
sounds good.
On that question, could the committee, when they meet, decide if they want to do that and how they're going to do it? What I'm saying is, can they do that? If we don't mandate them to do that, could they still do it? Or does it have to be in the resolution?
I think it's important to kind of say whether or not they should or should not, Marla. You don't want people out there kind of off the reservation saying stuff unauthorized or making promises that, they have no right to make. You're talking about acquiring property, buying people's property, spending tens of thousands and hundreds or even millions of dollars. I've seen in these instances. So I think it's better to have it kind of laid out exactly what these people should and should not be doing. Otherwise it's chaos. And otherwise the landowners are going to say, yeah, I talked to these guys three times and they're telling me all different things and no one's communicating to the township. It's all BS. and you kind of frighten them away, or you frustrate them, and so they just throw up their hands and say, forget it, I don't want to do it.
I personally feel that I don't want this group to do that, or if they do want to do it, they need to get permission from the board, and they have our township manager with them when they talk to a property owner.
Yeah, I agree. Not prohibit them from doing it, but make it under certain circumstances. Because there is a risk.
Yeah. Okay. I'm very concerned about how we present ourselves and our financial abilities and things to homeowners. And you get somebody who's old and they maybe hear things resonate with them that maybe don't resonate with other people. There's all situations, and I really would feel more comfortable. I'm not saying the group shouldn't do it, but I think that it has to be coordinated through the township.
I think that makes perfect sense, Chuck. And I think we just need to figure out how to word it. I just think there's some opportunities that we probably would lose. That would be important. There are potentially opportunities for the township that they might lose out on because of an inability for us to, for the township to approach someone. Yeah. But I think the way you described it is well. I mean, we just would leverage the wording that Peter was alluding to, but then add a caveat to that it's only, they'd have to review what they're planning to do with the board and the manager before they did it, or something like that.
I'm okay with leaving it to the manager's discretion whether he or she needs to bring it to the board.
Okay.
I don't know how everybody else feels about it. I don't want to put us in every decision making thing.
Yeah, I agree, and I think having the manager there for the discussions to put some boundaries around it. I mean, is that something that you can put into language, Peter?
Yeah, I think, yes, definitely Mark and I can figure something out.
That's great. I mean, that sounds good to me, Chuck. I agree with you. I trust, that just means whoever the supervisors are have to pick good managers like Mark all the time.
Noelle, are you okay with that?
No, I'm totally on board. No, okay. I was going to interject a couple times, but everybody else beat me to it. And yeah, that sounds pretty solid.
Terry?
Good. Yep.
Thanks for bringing that up, Dan.
Thanks, Chuck. Thanks for everybody listening to me ramble. I appreciate that.
So Peter and I will work on those updates and get a new copy out to you by the end of the week for review. And then approval at February 2nd's meeting.
Okay.
Great.
We did get one comment during that from Brian Hill. He recommended that no board of supervisor be on the committee. This is not a voting committee. They should hear what the community has to say and not their board interest. So he agreed with no board of supervisor on the committee.
Okay. So we can move on to our next resolution for discussion, which is open space interests. Mark?
So Peter, would this would have to go along with that last conversation that we had. It would probably be included in here too.
Yeah, they really go hand in hand.
Yeah. So this kind of just lays out the procedures for reviewing open space property and interest for the acquisition by the township, and other townships have, and once the committee gets put together, we'll work with them to make a criteria, like an exhibit. I did send one out, but we'd clean it up to meet our needs. So they'd use that to evaluate properties based on the criteria, and then they'd rank them, and then we'd put them in order, or the committee would put them in order to see how they would be purchased. The price paid by the township for the purchase of an interest being land shall not exceed the price of an established appraisal. So anytime that the township is going to purchase a piece of land, the piece of land has to be appraised, and the township cannot pay more than that appraisal for that piece of land, purchase agreements and related documents shall be in a form and substance that the solicitor puts together. We have to let the Perkiomen Valley School District know of any property that the township purchases. So this just sets out some guidelines for the purchase. Really, it's the appraisal process, the certified appraisal. And I think we'll probably put something in here with the conversation, the last conversation that we just had with the actual committee will also weave into this. But I'd like the exhibit A we'll put in here, and then we'll, which is the criteria, which is like a checklist for reviewing a property. But I'd like the committee to have a chance to review that once they get established, and then we could, you know, redo the resolution then also. But this kind of gives us a starting point.
Okay. Yeah. Usually in my experience, what I've seen in other townships is you put together a committee, and the first job the committee does is actually kind of go figure out, you know, what properties they, you know, are most critical. And that can be done based on just a review of the properties in the township, or it can be done as people apply or submit applications to the township for their land to be preserved. And the criteria sheets that I've seen, most of them actually use some sort of numerical system. You get a certain number of points for each criteria you meet, you know, such as lot size, you know, critical habitats, that sort of thing. And then, you know, whatever property comes out with the highest number of points, that's your number one objective, and it goes down from there. But then practically speaking, you know, it's out of the township's hands whether or not we can preserve or purchase our top properties. It all depends on if the landowners are interested. And so what usually happens is you have people come in as they, you know, come in, and you basically say, well, if they're high enough on the list and we got the money, we're going to preserve them. But if they're way down on the list, unless we got are flush with cash and it doesn't matter, you might say, yeah, sorry, you're not high enough on our criteria. We're going to pass.
Peter, just for the record, the procedures that we spell out here, you know, in terms of appraisals and how much we can pay, a lot of this defaults to what the state requires of us under the second class township code, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of these are based on requirements of the Open Space Land Act, in conjunction with the second class township code.
Okay.
There's not tons of flexibility here on a lot of these, because they're mandated by state law.
It's important for people to know that, and we're not just winging it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like there's some good models out there, so when the committee gets up and running, they can look to what other folks are doing on how they rank, how they make decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get different samples from different townships for them and give them the opportunity to look at that and decide what works best for them.
Is there any further discussion on this agenda item, this resolution? Can we move on? Okay. Moving on, the next resolution, the fourth one, is for a code of conduct for the township.
So this has been discussed actually since I got here in 2019, a code of conduct for board members and commission and committee members. So looked around at other townships, and some townships have them, and kind of picked and choose to get something that seems to work for us. So this statement of ethical standards is hereby approved by the Board of Supervisors in order to guide the members of volunteer boards, commissions, and committees in their service to the township and the community. The purpose of this policy is to just establish certain ethical standards of conduct for all such members, to set forth the board's expectations as to how such members should act in representing the township, and to emphasize that in any and all acts or actions by such volunteers should be done with the best interest of the township in mind. So again, the general statement, no elected or appointed official shall engage in any business or transaction or shall have any interest which would impair his independent judgment or action in the performance of their official duties. Now, this doesn't apply, like, sometimes people have to abstain from a vote, and that allows for that. It just, you shouldn't be using your official appointment as a, like a bargaining chip. Provide fairness and respect to citizens and other board and commission members. Make an effort to attend the meetings of their boards or commissions that they're put on, and to review materials prior to the meeting. Loyalty, put the interest of the township of Lower Frederick over personal considerations. Their goal should be what is in the best interest for the broadest public good of the township. Restricted activities goes in and talks about the Ethics Acts of Pennsylvania. The whole Ethics Act is what governs us, and that's on the website. Harassment and discrimination. No committee member, board member should discriminate or harass anyone, especially at a meeting. Violence. Lower Frederick Township does not tolerate any violence committed by or against employees, elected officials, or public or other committee members. All people shall be treated with courtesy and respect at all times. Confidentiality, you know, board members and commission members are provided with documentation that may not, be disclosed at some time. So if something is given to someone, they should not disclose that. Attendance again goes into more dictates if a member fails to attend three consecutive meetings or duly advertised meetings without being excused for good cause, the chair of the respective board or commission committee can recommend that action be taken by the Board of Supervisors. You know, we just want, if people are appointed to a board, you know, every now and then someone's not going to make it, and that's very understandable, but, you know, you want people to make it to the meetings so that there's quorum. Use of social media. Social media should not be used against the township. Again, it shouldn't be used to disseminate confidential information. It shouldn't be used as a harassing, you know, for the violence. It shouldn't be used to harass other people on the boards or township employees. Shouldn't be distributing pictures from the township unless allowed to, given permission by the township manager. Again, not defaming the township employees or elected officials or other committee members. Even on social media, you can create a hostile environment. And shouldn't portray themselves as a township official if they are not. This policy is not intended to violate the First Amendment rights of any elected or appointed officials, but rather has been imposed to protect the township of all its personal volunteers. This portion from social media posting and other types of communication which violate their rights, including their right to privacy. again, we state that this is a little, this is the townships, but the Ethics Act does dictate most of the laws that we have to all abide by.
I have two questions for Peter. The first one is, I don't know how to say this. Are we going to have people sign this saying they've received it? I mean, how are we going to use this?
That, you know, that's one of the ways you can do it. I've seen that done in other townships. And yeah, you have everyone sign off on it saying that, you know, they've read it and acknowledge that they've received it. Occasionally there's problems where people refuse to sign it, but you know, really it, what you want is you want to make sure that they're acknowledging that they get it, that they've had it and it, they're not ignorant of it.
Can you say that if you send it to them,
I mean, you don't have to. There's no legal requirement that you do anything. You know, the board can just pass this as a resolution, and it's that still makes it applicable. It's just okay. You then have people saying, "Oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't aware of this. You know, I didn't know I wasn't supposed to do that." That sort of thing.
But we'll make an effort to disseminate it, and that is
yes.
Okay. And my second question is. Is this enforceable against supervisors? Because supervisors are a little different. My understanding is we come under the Ethics Act and Second Class Township Code. So who's going to enforce it? I mean, against the supervisor?
There's two things here. One, if you read through it, other than with attendance, there is no really any enforcement mechanism or penalties for failure to follow it. And so, you know, the question of whether or not it can be forced against the supervisor, it really isn't there yet because there's nothing to enforce. The only way you can enforce it against the supervisor or anyone is, you know, basically by in the public saying, hey, you're not following this. And if the person retorts, well, so what? You know, that's the end of it. There is no penalty for failing to follow it.
I guess what I mean is if someone behaves badly, according to this, we as a board can remove them from a board or commission. But if one of us, I'm not aware of an enforcement mechanism. And the reason I'm asking this is being at PSAT's conferences, I've heard many tales of woe of supervisors not showing up at meetings. I mean, you can have the police come and remove them if they're behaving badly. But you can't remove a supervisor from their position.
Only the governor can do that.
Right. So, well, I think the state house can do it. But that's what I'm saying is we're in a little bit different category. In some ways, we have to comply with higher standards of the Ethics Act. But I'm just wondering if elected officials should be included in every single item here.
There's two things, Marla. Like, if you want to actually have an enforcement mechanism and you want to enforce this, then yes, you probably should take elected officials out because it can't really be enforced against them or somehow show that they're a separate category. The way this is currently written is this is more of a set of guidelines, a set of expectations, as opposed to a set of regulations that must be followed. So there is no enforcement mechanism, but really what the enforcement mechanism is that if someone is not complying with these things, it can be, you can point to this saying, hey, look, you need to do this. This is how we expect you to act. And you hope that being a township volunteer, that they will adjust their behavior.
But my question is, if someone is non-compliant with something in here and the board views it to be egregious, can that person be removed from that board or commission
Not under this particular code of conduct, because the code of conduct doesn't state that. Now, there might be, you know, under the laws that created, let's say, the Planning Commission or created the EAC, there may be, you know, laws in there that state when someone can be removed from those committees. And so long as you follow those laws, yes, you're good. But there's nothing in this particular document that says you are empowered to remove someone on a committee who's not following these guidelines.
So, yeah, I know, like, the one thing you have here as far as attendance, I think that comes right out of the municipality's planning code in terms of the meetings, missing meetings. I know it does say that for Planning Commission, it has some strict
correct.
Rules. And it also talks about how you can remove a member in general terms.
Generally, like with planning with a planning commission member on the MPC, you can remove someone for malfeasance, nonfeasance, you know, that sort of language. And they're actually, you know, there's a hearing that has to be undertaken. Right now, the way this code of conduct or ethics policy is written, we don't lay out an enforcement mechanism. If you want, we can, you know, we can put one in there. But at this point in time, it is not one.
I think this is a statement of intent, and the enforcement mechanism, we don't appoint or reappoint.
And that's certainly, you know, something you can do, and it's something you can point to if someone is like, wait a second, why am I not being reappointed? You can say, well, you know, we have this, code of conduct, and you failed to follow it. We asked you to follow it. You continue to fail to follow it. So we're not going to reappoint you.
And at minimum, can we make sure that any applicants or any of the committees, councils, or whatever, are aware that this, I mean, I think this is where the sign off comes in. If, you know, if you're putting your name in for a position to be on one of the boards or committees or councils, you should be made aware that this code of ethics or code of conduct exists, and, you know, sign off that you're aware of it, and you intend that individual would intend to, comport themselves appropriately, because unless you make them aware of it, they still, and like you said, they would not be re-upped when their term was over or whatever. But I think it should be a provision of us bringing somebody on board that they're aware that this exists so that they don't violate it.
But I don't know if Laura Frederick has an application, a written application to apply to mm-hmm. seek membership to a township board or a committee. But if you do, you certainly could then add this to that application and say, here's our code of conduct. You know, you need to sign it and file with your application if you want to be considered.
Process of, oh, go ahead, Marla, you go first.
I just want to say, I don't think we need to be that formal. I think what Dan is saying is people need to be aware of this, that this is our expectations of someone being on a board and commission. I don't know how formal we need to have, but they definitely should be aware that this is the expectation.
Yeah, I can easily pass it out to anyone that, you know, applies.
Yeah, have a formal process, Peter, by which anybody who's interested in being on any of the boards or councils, they have to send just a brief letter or note to Mark indicating their interest. So there's nothing wrong. Basically, the process would be we would respond and say, glad you're interested. By the way, this is... Mark sends him the document saying this is the code of conduct, and if you think you can't comply with it, you know,
yep,
whatever, I don't know, but you get the general gist.
Yep, that's not a problem. We can do that.
So So what are you talking about, Mark, then? Just emailing it to people?
Yeah, I would email it and then just, you know, to start, I could email it to, I have all the boards. I could email it out once it gets approved to all of the board members, just so they have it. You know, when we email the minutes or the agenda or anything like that.
We could ask the chair of each board to maybe announce, well, after you do that at each meeting, that this has been sent out. And if you have not received, please acknowledge whether you've received it.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the whole point here is we're not saying that people have to agree with it. You're just acknowledging that it's been provided to you. And that's a very important distinction to make for anybody who gets all worried about this. You're just saying that you have, it has been given to you and you have been made aware of it. I don't really have a problem with people signing it and asking them to sign it. To be honest with you, I've signed a lot of things over the years. And I run a business and I ask my employees to sign these things. They say a lot more than this in some cases.
Now, this is pretty consistent. It's actually a lot calmer than the things I've signed for most of the companies
that
I've had to work with related to social media and ethics and that kind of stuff. And
so I think as a compromise, at least, I think we should ask the chairs, if the group doesn't want people to sign it, to ask the chairs to announce it and ask members.
I'd be all right.
Acknowledge whether they have received it. And if there isn't, then Mark will send it again. And if they still didn't get it, we'll send it to their house.
Yeah. Are people that opposed to them signing it? I think it's just you're signing it that you received it.
That's all I think it should say.
Well, I think if you ask in a meeting and everybody raises their hand and says they've received it, that's all the acknowledgement you need. They've received it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Terry?
Yep. Thank you. Yeah, I think the level that Mark presented and what you've proposed makes sense. Just keep it at that level.
Okay.
All right. So we'll clean up the language of the make it general, gender neutral. And again, I'll get this out to everyone.
Mark, there's a couple typos.
Yeah.
At the end of the paragraph, it should be emphasize with a Z.
Yeah.
All right. Just if you just want to send that to me, then I'll get those corrected. I'm not the best typer sometimes.
Well, they're all spelled correctly. They're just the wrong word.
That's not going to pick it up. So should we include in the title of this thing, since we are mentioning elected positions, it doesn't say that. It says policies setting forth ethical standards for members of volunteer boards, commissions, and committees. But it does not say anything about elected officials, but elected officials is throughout. Is that something?
I mean, again, I would defer to Peter. I mean, I'm thinking that pretty much everything in here, plus a couple other things, were already covered under the Ethics Act. I don't know if it's duplicative or if there are things in here that are...
The only thing I would say, just from a kind of a political aspect of it, including yourself, not exempting yourself from these rules and including yourself in them, you know, kind of, you know, helps with all the other volunteers saying, hey, we're applying the same rules to ourselves as we apply to you, even if they are duplicative of other laws. I think in some ways it's better to include yourself, to say, you know, we're not making special rules for us.
Thank you, Peter.
They apply across the board.
Right. So
yeah, I would have no problem signing anything that said that. We're no different than anybody else. I agree.
So we changed the title to say policy setting forth ethical standards for elected officials and for members of volunteer boards, commissions, and committees.
Yep. We'll get it redone and back out.
Anybody else have any comments? I have one more, but I don't want
to. I just want to let you guys know the form will change a little bit, but I think it's going to be, we'll put together a written resolution that this will be an exhibit to. So that's how you'll actually enact it at the next meeting. So it's not going to just be a voice vote. There'll be a written resolution, one page that just kind of says we're adopting the attached.
So my only comment, and I'm going to throw this out to Peter. When you read the first item, which is the general statement about no elected or appointed official, is it clear to you that that does not preclude somebody who does business, owns a business, and does work for the township from being, you know, being on boards, committees, or whatever? I'm wondering whether we could add a couple words here or there just to clarify that a little bit. But
I mean, I think what this is really referring to is if you have a lollipop store and you use your influence as an elected official to get the lollipop contract.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Peter, you're the lawyer, but I mean, I think there's a distinction between the, I mean, it's benefiting your business or your family because of your position, not just having a business.
I understand the point. I don't think it says it the way it needs to say it. That's all I'm trying to say.
Chuck, we can tweak that language. I understand where you're coming from. And I agree, Mark, what we're trying to do is the way Marla stated it. And someone can read that general statement very broadly and basically say, you can't volunteer for the township if you're doing anything in the township that would, you know, kind of negatively affect the way you work for the township. So that could almost apply to anyone and everyone. But what we're really aiming for is someone who uses, you know, their volunteering for the township to either advance their own business interests, or, you know, uses their, you know, somehow, you know, uses their volunteerism, you know, the way they vote on things or recommend things is tainted by their desire to help their business rather than what's the best for the township. So, yeah, we can definitely tweak that.
Yeah, it's a little too broad, I think.
But I'm also guessing, Peter, this would necessarily preclude someone from being on a committee, but in certain situations, they would have to recuse themselves if an issue impacted them personally.
Yes. Like if a development was being built right next to their farm, perhaps, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a joke. Self-flat.
Right. I don't have the drum roll sound effect.
Yeah.
That's all my only suggestion. If you could tweak the wording there to make it a little more precise about what we're worried about.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, I mean, I you know, I can give you an example. I have another client who put together a committee dealing with looking at electricity and power, and they appointed someone who was in that field. And they then used the connections made through the committee to basically try to find clients. And, you know, that's the only reason why they joined the committee was, you know, to try to expand their business relationships and networking. You know, that's the sort of thing that you want to try to weed out.
Okay. Is there any other discussion on this resolution? Everybody good to move forward?
Yep.
All right. So that brings us to new business. Is there any new business?
I have nothing at this time.
And then also brings us to public comment.
I'm not seeing anyone's hands raised or.
Bob.
Hey, Chuck, you got me?
Yes.
Yeah, we got you, Bob.
You're on, Bob.
Bob Burns, Ziegler Road. I just wanted to let you know that Heidi Brown's husband, Rob, spoke with Rebecca from the DEP today.
Great. Okay.
Browns couldn't be on the call tonight, but they'll be back at the next meeting. And they, you know, let me know that. So I figured I'd let you guys know.
Yeah. Actually, Heidi Brown she's listed as a participant. I think she came in a little after the meeting had started.
Okay, good. All right. Yeah, sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other comments from the public, Mark?
I'm not seeing anything.
Okay. Guess that brings us to adjournment. And a motion to adjourn. I'll make the motion for adjournment. Chuck Geiser.
I'll second.
Marla Hexter seconds. All in favor of adjourning, say aye.
Aye.
Good night.
Good night. Take care.
Good night. Thank you.
Or can hang out for a second. I want to try this. Right. I want to try this thing. Just give me 1 second here. All right. So I'm going to do a breakout room. And I'm going to leave Peter and Carol.
So what should happen is a box should come up and you write in number one, and then you'll get a pull down of who's here, and you assign people to room one, and then you can do as many rooms as you want. And you see that? You're the only one who can see it.
Yeah, I got it. I'm trying.
I'm removing people. So, but I'm not reporting them.
So it's just the board.
It's the board. Carol and Siobhan is still there.
Oh, okay.
You can stop the recording. Whoever is.
All right. Hold on a second.
We don't need to have this on the...